into is I have this framework for what we're calling a psychedelic accelerator to achieve the true psychedelic experience, which just removes psychedelics, is the gnosis that has informed the Christian mythos or dynamic, and seems to be the center of what is being expressed in a lot of the works of Stanley Kubrick, hinted at and explored and it's attempted to be communicated by certain writers like Anton Wilson, Philip K. Dick. And my model for it is that of the experience needed to get into the center of, I contend it requires much like a rocket. If you put rocket fuel into a rocket, it will go. But without the scaffolding that holds it into place, you don't know where it's going to go. Kind of like a balloon that is filled and you just sort of let the end go and the air goes out and it spirals in circles. But education, exposure to music, math, art, provides a scaffolding that allows the rocket to go straight in one direction, up and out of the confines of the planet and into outer space, which would be the breaking open the head moment. So I'm concluding that the average nomadic brain outside of culture, outside of a more rigid classical educational experience, it has a different experience compared to that of the brain that has been immersed in classical education, exposure to the arts, understanding of mathematics. And let's face it, the average American today rarely goes past algebra. So an understanding of geometry and a knowledge of calculus that is taught in most high schools in America today is an infinitely advanced understanding of mathematics when you look at the way history is and human beings' exposure to math. I mean, on a day-to-day basis, you might recognize that you use addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. You might not understand that you're using algebra or that you're using geometry or that you're even using calculus. So it's in there, but you're not necessarily aware of it. So I'm saying that a brain that has been allowed to see the codified workings of certain things, being able to read music, when it is exposed to this accelerator, it has a radically different experience. So Mark wanted to kind of refute that or speak to that.
Well, I do want to speak to that, and I guess we're in the traditional boxing ring at this moment, because I want to hold those ideas up to what I think are some pretty serious chops.
Okay.
I want to start with the idea of education and knowledge and learning itself. You could put this in terms of world travel, because anybody who's done any travel knows that you can never understand what a culture is really like until you've actually visited the place. You will never get the feel for it. You can get close with movies. You can become quite knowledgeable with literature and things. Like, you can get into it, close to it. But the actual environment is the real McCoy, basically. I would use a comparison of anybody who's a Japanese film lover, go to Japan. You will be astonished. But anyway, so this idea of world travel is there. Now, what about a person who can't travel? What about a genius who can't travel? Is he less capable of enlightenment than a genius who can travel? Okay. All right. Will his path be maybe longer, but necessarily reach the same place, or can he use that rocket fuel to get himself all the way there quickly, as you suggest? I don't know. So let's continue to the next level, sort of the level down. Now we're talking about people, maybe they're not that smart, essentially. You know, they're not really, let's call it, sophisticated.
Okay.
And you've heard me use that word once or twice before. I consider myself to be a sophisticated person, but to me, and you're a very sophisticated person too, and, you know, just on a personal note to any listeners, Bill and I first began to talk to each other through email, and the ideas that we discussed were incredibly complex and deep and resonating with, to me, what was a truly abysmal depth. And I was very disappointed by Bill's writing ability, essentially. I thought he was quite a crappy writer, and although his thoughts were very good. And then I got to talk to him on the radio, and I felt like the biggest idiot on the block because, man, is this guy articulate. Like, he might be the single most articulate person I've ever talked to in my life. A guy can put together ideas on the fly while talking like nobody else I've ever heard. I actually consider that to be an improvement upon writing. To me, the articulated word is, it's because it's better. I'm talking to you now, you're talking to me. I can question you, you know. You can come away from my work, some of which I think is dazzlingly brilliantly written, quite frankly. You can come away from my work with whatever opinion you want. You know, you can decide what it means. But if you talk to me about what it means, you're going to get the definition that I want.
I like right? that. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what happens when people talk. That's what happens when they talk. So, you know, an extraordinary, you know, as Nabokov said, I think like a genius, I write like a distinguished author, and I speak like a child, basically. You know, so again, we're talking about variegations of different types of abilities. We could call them media abilities, because even the spoken word is a form of media. Media just means something in between, right? It's the method by which a spoon is media, right? Because it's not your hand. It's not all the food is not always touching your body. It's media to your mouth, basically. So, you know, so what we're really talking about then is media exposure. Now, and media exposure also applies to things like, say, going to a place. That's a form of a media event as well. You are mediated. Travel is a medial event. The act of traveling, you're going somewhere. You're not there yet. When you get there, you're there.
Okay.
Right? So, and of course, that applies even to meandering type of travels. There's always some kind of medial destination in mind, basically. You can't, very few people just wander around with no destination whatsoever. Only the true traveler, and those people are pretty radical, quite frankly. But anyway, so with that in mind, so we have this idea then, we can see how the experience of education, learning, the culture of maybe culture, what I would ultimately call sophistication, because culture narrows down geographical areas, right? Where sophistication is just general of sort of artistic expression of thought, exposure to different ideas, and some of them becoming very complex. All of that other stuff we can see as a kind of a media event. So what you're, to me, the ultimate meaning of your thesis would have to be that someone in a total media blackout could not have any kind of enlightening experience. Like, say, if you gave the mushroom to someone who'd been in solitary confinement for a decade, what would happen to them, right? That person who'd lived in a total media blackout.
Okay.
Or a blind person, for instance. How is the experience different for a blind person?
Let me sort of quantify something here then. Taking the nomadic brain versus the classically educated brain, and this notion of the classical education as the scaffolding that holds the rocket in place for a pointed and immediate trip straight up and out to get the breaking open the head experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's
so you're
sort of
it provides a platform essentially,
yes,
a stable platform. Experience can.
So it takes the randomness out of the equation. It is possible that the nomadic brain, in its swirling, chaotic balloon kind of motion, can reach and ascend and go into the same realms. I'm saying that it's possible, but I'm saying that there's more randomness to it. There's a very good chance that it might not.
All right. I see where you're going.
So that the way the system is constructed is designed for this event to occur. What popular culture will say to you is, say no to drugs. I mean, it's language. Yeah, say no to cocaine. Say no to heroin. Don't get me wrong. Say no to gobbling a bowl full of prescription pills. Poison, not going to do you any good. But for the plants that grow on God's green earth, that are there for you, that work, that, what is it someone said, beauty is, I think David said, beauty is something that fits. This fits. This makes crystal clear. That's the reason why it can be such an overwhelmingly terrifying experience, is because you want to explain it away as madness. You want to explain the things that you're experiencing as just a drug, but you can't, because it, the eclipse is in motion. This is happening to you right now. But with that educational tool bag at your side, I believe you can get to that point where you want to, you will hang up the phone.
Okay, well, all right. Yeah, I mean, I do have a problem. You know, I hate contradicting you, because obviously I like you immensely, and I don't have very many people that I can just sit and talk with and enjoy it this much. But I want to make a quick reference to a certain film.
Okay.
It's by Lars von Trier.
Okay.
And it's called The Idiots.
I've wanted to see that. I've never seen that one.
I highly recommend this film, particularly if you can be disarmed when you see it, do so.
Well, his films definitely have that quality.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this one I think is his best movie. That's a critical observation, obviously. I love his films in general, so that's another matter. But the reason I bring it up is because, and it's funny, because I watched this film right when I was beginning my drug experimentation. I was using LSD and mushrooms, and I was smoking a massive amount of marijuana at the same time, about 3 ounces a month, basically. So I saw the film, and what I realized, I think, is helpful to distinguish where I delineate in what you're saying here. Because I agree with you. I'm glad, quite frankly, for myself, that I have this platform, the platform that I have, to explore this world, essentially, and explore the extraordinary mysteries that exist out there. But the movie The Idiots is about a bunch of rich kids that mentor a group of retarded people. If you watch, and I'm going to use the word retarded because I think it's the best term, quite frankly. When you watch Lars von Trier's films, there are a great number of characters in his movies that are suffering from Down syndrome. It's a repeated thing in his films. And he implies in his movies that they have a spiritual awakening that we do not, essentially.
Okay.
And now, if you've ever spent time with mentally retarded people, and I've spent a good deal of time with a mentally retarded child, they often spin like Sufis, okay? Now, what I'm suggesting is that the state of ecstasy that you're talking about, see, what I think you do is you have this platform, this fantastic upbringing, you know, a pretty stable life. Basically, you can exist, in a wide variety of venues. You could go and meet the queen. Nobody would be afraid you'd try to kiss her. And on the other hand, you could go and right down into the down and dirtiest world and probably come out of it relatively unscathed, essentially, using your intelligence to, I mean, obviously there's always risks involved. Kissing the queen and going into the down and dirty world are both very dangerous things to do, or meeting the queen is a dangerous thing to do. But anyway, you have that ability, right? That's the framework from which you're building, essentially, your concept of enlightenment. And I don't even really like to use the word enlightenment because I think it's too grand, essentially. And so going from Lars von Trier's work, The Idiots, I want to sum it up with what I think is, aside from the Bible, which was probably written by the same guy, and aside from the Hebrew letters, I highly recommend for everyone who speaks English a very in-depth study of William Shakespeare. There are simple phrases in Shakespeare that are so brimming with truth. And the truth of the matter is, fortune makes fools of us all. That's what we are. It's just the framework of your foolishness, basically. And it is a beautiful foolishness. I would never contradict that. But what I'm saying is that that's the truth about Lars von Trier's film. I almost don't want to tell you what I think the revelation of that movie is, because I wouldn't want to spoil it for you. But the fact of the matter is, when I came away from that movie, I went, oh my God, we're all retarded. We are all, every single person, we're all lost. We're like a bunch of morons out there bumping each other. And we talk about, sure, we find each other. We find each other sometimes, and we care for each other and comfort each other. And sometimes that comfort, because of the type of person that we are, takes a really fantastically intricate form that we can express to others. That's a gift, basically, that we have. But the feeling, that's where it really is, because this has to create a feeling, right? That's the and that goes back to what you're talking about, going to these churches. Nobody finds God in these churches. They all sit and say, oh, yeah, sure. We believe the pastors talk to God, and we believe when we tell everyone else that we have a personal relationship with Jesus H. Christ. Well, come on already. You know? It's obvious that it's not true, right? So there you have it. That's the whole point, is that when you come to what is really, when you break open that head, that's what you really realize. Okay. That you're one of fortune's fools. Right. And remember, the tarot is a fortune deck. It's a deck of fortune, right? The wheel of fortune, that's what we're talking about. And that's what I really think having your head truly broken open is. It's being broken on the wheel. The experience doesn't have to be terrible because of the type of life that you might have led up to that point. I mean, you are a very nice guy, I think. I just get that feeling. You've obviously studied to be a nurse. I don't think that, knowing what I know about you, I don't think you're an asshole nurse. There's asshole nurses out there, and the rest of the nurses are really, they're the kind of people you almost could count on. I say almost because we're all human, mm-hmm. right? But if there's somebody to count on, somebody who's actually going to care for you when you really need to be cared for, a nurse is just about the best and highest profession, in my opinion, and I spent a lot of time in the hospital in my life. So I think I know what I'm talking about, and I've seen evil nurses, and they're out there. There's a whole class of evil nurses, and people like you have to go in and battle against that kind of bullshit, you know? So it's a really noble thing. So I think you're a really good guy, you know? But at the end of it all, you are one of fortune's fools, like the rest of humanity. That is the true revelation of the tarot, you know, the wheel, that we are all on the wheel, and that we must be broken by the wheel. That's why the person at the top of that wheel has a club or a sword, basically the Sphinx, of course. And the mystery of the Sphinx is what we're talking about here. You know, not to use a too gross out of a term, but, you know, that's what's happening. There's a little sphincter in there, and we are opening it up. The mystery of the Sphinx is opened to us. And that is a complex thing for those of us who, you know, and this is why the Buddhists say ignorance is bliss. They are correct in that respect. But there are other kinds of bliss.
Well, and, you know, yes. Okay. Agreed completely.
Ignorance is a form of bliss. Is what should be said. And that's the truth of the matter, is that the ignorant, and this is what I believe, and this is how I contradict your theory, and I hope, you know, I haven't upset you too much, but the point is that bliss, right? And the pathway can't be denied. It can't be denied to somebody. It can't be denied to anyone. And, you know, just to add to the whole concept of media isolation, the guy who created the I Ching, which dials right into Terence McKenna, and the whole concept of apocalypse, that's when the Sufi spins, when the world starts to fall apart, right? It's like he's a magnet holding reality itself together, essentially, creating electricity, right?
I like that.
That's what happens. It's when the world starts to fall apart that the person in a state of bliss holds it together, essentially. And that exists in many ways and in many forms.
So do you believe that in the turbulence and the sphincter with which society, American society, had to pass through in the 60s and 70s,
yes.
That was why the music of that era has such a particular quality to it? That without that music, none of us would have made it through that passage.
It was the leap, the so-called leap. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. So Crowley talks about this. Crossing the abyss requires a leap of laughter, right? That's what he says. And music and laughter are very, very similar to each other in regards to the type of exuberance that they express, particularly the seminal music of the 1960s. And obviously, you know, the thing about it is it has to cast a pretty wide net. So you have the Beatles on one hand, and then you have the Rolling Stones on the other, and then you have Led Zeppelin, three very different expressions they can almost be called an unholy trinity of rock and roll. I think they really do deserve that appellation. You were right in singling those three groups out. We could have a complete discussion about that, and that would be quite revealing, quite frankly, in regards to its detail. But
it's
a step across nothingness, basically, right? That's what it is. So it requires an energy. It has to be pushed from behind. And music is a form of faith. You know, if you've ever been in torture, if you've ever been in a torturous situation, I don't know if it's happened to you where you've been in real suffering, that certain songs can get stuck in your head. I had this the Garth Brooks song, I've Got Friends in Low Places, stuck in my mind for about 12 hours straight when I was going through one of the most tormenting experiences of my existence. It was pure hell. I could not get that song out of my head. I just kept cycling it over and over and over. It kept me alive somehow, and I'm not even a country music fan. And somehow all the lyrics were in there. I'd heard the song once or twice because, you know, I live in a cow town, basically, and country music is the thing here. So I hear that sort of stuff, and there it was. Just talk about a song, you know, fitting the situation, too, about sinking to, you know, the absolute bottom, basically. Well, and there it was, music, like something. I believe that music can literally be used to break torture, which is why they're not getting anything out of these guys in Guantanamo. It's why they're not getting anything out of them. They just start to go, in their heads, and that's it. It phones out all reality. They can waterboard them all they want, basically. It's a form. It's a mystical thing, music, basically. So, you know.
Okay, so let's try to not bring closure to this discussion, but how I want to sort of bring it back to the first topic, entryway into today's discussion,
yes,
which would
absolutely
be the word conspiracy.
Yes.
Knowing what we believe that we know from the authors of the past that we have read, the musicians whose music we've listened to, through our own experiences with certain things and certain applications of them, and we have come to a certain enough of an understanding of high weirdness that we can actually relate it, that you can mention something and you know that I've either been there or I can understand. So if this is a gnosis or a knowledge that has filtered into our lives, into the realms that we inhabit, that means that there are others out there that are aware of, that is aware of this knowledge and the application of this knowledge. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, how is this knowledge then being used?
Okay, so, well, that's a dead-on-the-money question.
Because I think for me, the notion of the word conspiracy never entered into my life until I was a freshman in college and I was experimenting with these substances, and it seemed in an instant, at a very specific instant, I just figured it out that if I was in a dorm room using a substance and experiencing what I was experiencing, then I clearly wasn't alone. And that if for me to acquire this substance required, you know, breaking the law, well, then what is the law? And who creates laws? And if on the other side of that law, if they're saying, say no to these things, that doesn't necessarily mean that they themselves are saying no to these things. And I knew in an instant that the history of the world, the newspapers that I got day to day, and the 10 o'clock news was a far cry from what was really going on. And so that was when I first considered that word, conspiracy. So I think we both agree that that was actually a very astute understanding or an astute conclusion to make in that moment. The problem is that I made that conclusion in that headspace, and that led to a very, very difficult experience because I sat in my chair and I went back. I said, how did I get into this chair? And I started to look at history through that lens for the first time, and I got into places that led me into what I discovered in the writings of Philip K. Dick, which would be Valis and the Valis Loop, and that was my portal into thoughts of that nature. So, tying it back now to conspiracy, how the things that we've discussed in this conversation, I guess it would be about control and conspiracy and how you come to terms with recognizing that for the first time.
Okay, well, that's a pretty grand statement, so I hope you don't mind if I all of it or try.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, let's start right with the term conspiracy itself. As I mentioned before, it means to breathe together, right? Mm-hmm. Well, as a fully fledged inductee into the world of the use of these kinds of drugs, the ultimately revelatory use. Have you ever noticed while taking these drugs that you lose the sense of your own breathing?
I have noticed that.
Right. If you really pay attention to your own breathing, you'll notice that it seems like you're not breathing.
Yeah, it's almost like you're in water. It's just coming through
every
pore. That's
right. Yes, absolutely. You can. It's very hard to, like, when we breathe now. If you concentrate, you'll notice. You notice your breathing, right? Yes, I'm breathing in. Yes, I'm breathing out. But it's the experience almost of holding your breath. Being able to not have to breathe, in a sense. Of course, you are breathing, but you're breathing, and this is the key to the concept of conspiracy. And I'm going to tie this in the ways that will, satisfy all those who prefer the meteor stuff as well. So basically, you have this idea of breathing, okay, being related to the concept of conspiracy, and you yourself say that under the use of these entheogens, that these drugs affect your breathing more than anything else. This is one of the critical things that you need to know, is that they make you breathe like a robot.
Okay.
They get your breathing. They make your breathing becomes perfect. You begin to breathe in synchronicity with your environment under the influence of these drugs. That's why that if you pay attention to your breathing, you'll notice that you seem to, that the reality that you breathe in and breathe out with seems to be going with your breath, so that it doesn't seem to be coming out of you. Nothing seems to be moving at all in the way in which it used to move. And of course, motion and breathing are very closely associated too. Okay, so now what I want to add to that is the concept of Buddhist meditation. You know, these crazy Buddhists, what they do, because they don't believe in the use of any kind of entheogen, any kind of psychedelic drug, is that they just go into a cave. And they have the same experience, because what happens to them inevitably is that inside, when they can't see anything, they literally live in darkness for days on end, essentially, until their breathing starts to emanate the environment, and they have the essentially same experience. It's much more difficult to achieve because it requires a passage of real pain and suffering that you've got to put yourself through. Remaining still, which takes an effort of will. And that's one of the things that these drugs do, is that they give the opportunity for those of us who don't necessarily have the physical, you could just be born that way with incredible physical will. It's like being an athlete.
Right? I agree with that, yeah.
Not everybody has the ability to be a great athlete. That's just the way it is. Not everybody can play the drums like Buddy Rich, no matter how hard they practice. It's just the way it is. But there are pathways to the kinds of ecstasy that those people experience through these these types of psychedelic mind-altering drugs. So the fact that they deal with the breathing is extremely important. And the fact that can be revealed through meditation and the concept of just breathing is also important, just to tie in the idea that it all has to do with breath. Okay? And of course, this relates right back to the concept of the logos itself, which is the breath of God, right? The reality is manifest from the voice of God itself. The word is the flesh. That's the message of the Bible. The flesh and the word are one, right? So what comes out of what emanates as a breath becomes reality in a certain sense. But it's also what's taken in our case, because we're not necessarily evolved to the level of complete creator. I don't know if that's even necessarily desirable or even possible, because that becomes a kind of theology discussion, basically. So now let's get back to the idea that you said, so what is this law and where does this come from? And are the people who are providing us with this law, do they practice this law? Well, the first key to understand for the answer to this, to my answer to it, is that these occult principles that we discuss in the Western world, in our hemisphere, pretty much all come out of the Bible. Crowley was massively known as possibly the world expert on the Bible at the time of his life. The Hebrew, the Greek, the whole thing, he could practically recite it chapter and verse at random, just opening the book and somebody saying, what's this verse? And he could pretty much quote it from memory, essentially. So, and then, of course, he knew the Hebrew roots of all the and Greek roots of all the words as well, essentially. So the concept of the Bible and the word being made flesh is very important in this principle when we look into the concept of the occult in our world. Now, that the if we follow the footsteps of the conspiracy from the Logos itself up to the present day, we first of all, we can't break apart any part of the teleology. You understand? We can't take out one part and say, you know what, this part has a special principle to it. It's not really related to these other parts. If it really is a divine logos we're talking about, then there's a single teleology to it, even if it's not a linear, like it could be expanding like the ripples of a pond. Quite frankly, that's a better way to describe the process of time than the linear time that we've all become accustomed to, essentially. So, but anyway, so we have, there definitely has to be a single, every link has to be connected to every other link, essentially. So if we look at what's emerging now, it's clearly the Age of Aquarius. And it's more than just the age of a new freedom or a new thinking for oneself because of the ultimate implications that are behind that, okay? Now, if we accept the teleology, that is to say, if we accept all of these occult mysteries do indeed emanate from a singular source, then we can take from the Bible the following phrase, which was uttered by Christ. I am not a god of the dead. I am a god of the living. Now, if we use an interpretation of Crowley, basically, and Crowley's law, which is Liber Oz, okay? The summation of that law is love is the law, love under will, okay? Now, what does this really mean? Well, you have to understand what the word love means. That's what you really mean. You got to look at that word. Well, first of all, it's the same as live, all right? Live and love. Love and think of how often we say that. To live and love, that's what we want. We're just repeating ourselves, right?
You're
we want to love. Go ahead.
It's terrible. Robot Mark popped up here. So
okay, turn me off and we'll get back on.
You got it.